Stefano Morani is the chief executive of Renergen, a company that's been a favorite amongst private investors, individual or retail investors, as they are known in the industry. And they're about to be acquired by ASP Isotopes, which is also an interesting business. But today we've got Steph with us to give us some insight into why the deal and what next. Good to be talking with you again, Steph. It's been an interesting journey that you've had with Renergen, and we have, I suppose, documented it to a degree. It was lots of excitement, share price going up. Then you managed to secure a funding from Standard Bank and others. And now it looks like it's all over. So, you know, maybe let's just start at the beginning. Why are you doing this deal now with ASP Isotopes when, was it 45,000 shareholders? We'll be looking to you to say, we wanted you to take us to the Holy Land with this helium project that you have been working with in Virginia in the Free State.
So I hardly think that it's over. Actually, I think it's just the beginning. One needs to take a step back and look at the big picture. And I think it's very fair to say that if you consider the context of what's going on globally, you'll see that there's a massive geopolitical push between the powering nations to obtain sovereignty over their chains, their supply chains with regards to critical materials. And every day you'll see a new headline between the different countries in terms of who's making major steps towards securing this or that critical material, who's pushing the boundaries in this piece of technology or that piece of technology. There's also some rather frightening developments going on in terms of electronic warfare, in terms of what's surfacing and some of the skirmishes that are taking place globally at the moment. And so you've got a lot of countries that are starting to double down on their critical materials. So yes, going to the Holy Land with regards to the helium is part of it. And Renergen, Renergen is sitting on the deposit. I think given where we were in our cycle, we obviously needed to raise the lion's share of the capital, which we were on track for an IPO. Obviously, that got railroaded. I think everyone knows the story. This is a transaction that still enables us to reach the so-called Holy Land from a helium perspective. But the story is much bigger now. The story now is one of becoming one of the first and only companies on planet Earth that will be vertically and horizontally integrated in the critical materials chain. And in particular, when you're looking at things like electronics, when you're looking at things like space exploration. So if anything, this deal is massively enhancing, and it happens to be a right time for a transaction of this nature to take place. The fact that ASP is in critical materials, the fact that helium is a critical material, and the fact that the byproduct from the Virginia gas project is energy, which the country desperately needs. You've got this combination of factors where the timing really couldn't be better for the combination of these two companies. And investors are still in on the ride. They transform their Renergen shares for ASP shares. But now the opportunity set is significantly larger than it ever was before.
But helium was the story that you told people about. Now they're going to have to learn about isotopes. You know, how do isotopes work and what's the risk there, etc. And what was it that, just recap us, what was it that delayed your bringing of this helium to market?
So bringing the helium online, we had two challenges. One was obviously the undisclosed leak in the cold box by the OEM. That set us back probably about 13, 14 months. And that was, you know, we've obviously taken recourse against the OEM, but yeah, that is what it is. We're never going to be able to recover the confidence that was lost from the leak that was undisclosed to us in the cold box. The second thing that really set us back was that the compressor manufacturer, the compressors that we had, were a first of a kind, which also wasn't disclosed to us. And in the trials and the startup process, those compressors were not designed to handle to handle the conditions that we'd ordered. And so that was that. Now, yeah, obviously we're on the front foot with a compressor company, and they're, you know, they're there and they're doing what they need to do, and the compressors operate. Everything is fine, and they've made the repairs and the changes. But again, that also set us back many, many months. So, you know, it's just one of those things. It's part of commissioning a plant. Yeah, the ball did not bounce in our way in those two instances, and that caused massive delays. And those massive delays, obviously churned and turned the rumor mill with regards to what was happening and speculation.
I had a call from a very senior asset manager, a guy I know well, and have known for many years, who said, no, he doesn't believe that the deposit's there. He wants to know, how do we know that the helium deposit's there? Just, I'm sure you get that question many times. How do you answer it?
Very easily. We don't use South African geologists to determine whether the reserve is there. We use international experts who are qualified in oil and gas reservoir exploration and who have personal liability in certifying the reserves. It's very, very simple. You know, they've come out to the field. We've drilled the gas flows. They check it. To naively say that the gas isn't there is a complete misnomer, and it shows that the person isn't doing research, but rather just stating an opinion as opposed to fact. When you consider that very, very clearly, the biggest single challenge that the gold mines operating in the Velkom, Virginia area for the last 100 years has been that they are fiery mines because there's too much gas. Now, I'm sorry, you have to be very, very obtuse if you're going to make a claim like that without actually substantiating or doing the research yourself.
And who are the auditors? Who are the geologists? What company?
We used Sproul. Sproul acquired MHA. MHA were one of the leading experts out of Denver and Colorado. They became part of Sproul. Sproul is now obviously Canadian-based, massive international oil and gas certification company. And, you know, we've had the reserve certified under JORC. We've had them done under SAMROG. There's a host of different sets of legislation that we've had them certified under. And yeah, it's not just a case of the paperwork. Yeah, the other thing that you've got to consider is that you've got guys to the north, Rhino, who are exploring, and you've got guys to the east of us, D3. Also, how many announcements have they made in the last few weeks that they've drilled and they've struck in the same basin? So to say that the gas deposit isn't there, you really have to be a brave individual.
Yeah, I think it was more a question of not having done the homework and probably didn't realize what Sproul was. And Sproul is probably the gold medal globally when it comes to this.
It's
kind
a tier
of thing.
One.
So. So all you need to do actually in a case like that is say, well, Sproul have actually said it, and are they going to lie? And clearly they aren't. Were there other bidders for Renergen apart from ASP Isotopes?
We had three transactions on the table. Ultimately, what led the independent board to decide that we were going to go the route with ASP was that we felt that there was significantly more shareholder upside in the transaction with ASP, and that was for the reasons that I was describing before. The prospect of being able to create a vertically and horizontally integrated company in the critical materials business right now, where the state the world is in geopolitically, was a very attractive transaction, and we felt, well, at least the independent board felt, that that gave shareholders the most upside.
Are you staying in?
Yes, I am. Absolutely.
You're not selling your shares. You see this as a way of enhancing the value that that you have in the company.
That is, I'm in this for the long run. I had to sell a small smattering of shares as part of transaction costs for the deal, but that's pretty much it. For the rest of it, I'm in this for the long haul. And the point is that now, if you look at the way that the company is being structured, there are four primary pillars that we're going to be focusing on. Pillar number one is electronics and space exploration, and that's the entity that I'm going to be taking over as CEO of that division. That division will focus predominantly on the value chains created within the group, and then supplying those materials into critical areas. Hence the move for the company to relocate its global headquarters to Austin, which is the hub for a lot of these technologies, and also where the majority of the customer base is going to be, both from a space exploration perspective, now with Bastrop being essentially renamed to Space City, and with the fact that you've got the majority of the semiconductor firms either have R&D facilities in Austin, or they actually have fabs, like Samsung has a fab in Austin. So there's a huge consumption of helium, silicon, isotopically pure copper, silver, nickel, all of that's going into that critical hub over there. The second main pillar in the business is Quantum Leap Energy, which is the enrichment of uranium and nuclear fuels. That obviously, Paul should be speaking more to that, but that is a business which in time is going to be spun out. And then the third pillar is going to focus on mineral extraction. So that's essentially where the energy part of it sits in. So that's the energy part of the business. And then the fourth element in the business is, the fourth element of the business is still a little bit of a work in progress, and we'll start to unpack that a little bit more. But it's part of the vertically integrated. Is the medicines. So it's the nuclear, it's the radioactive isotopes for nuclear medicines. So there we're looking at the molybdenum, we're looking at ytterbium, all of the short lived, really short radioactive half life medicines that go into cancer therapies.
Yeah, it's really exciting when you have a look into the future or the potential here. But as far as the shareholders are concerned, maybe they aren't kind of 100% understanding why it's necessary for you personally as the CEO of Renergen to be based in Texas. When did you make that decision, given that I suppose to them the most important thing was just bring the helium to market?
So the board took a decision to relocate me temporarily to Austin, and that was because we were going for an IPO on the NASDAQ. And in order for shareholders to really get their arms around the deal, it needed one of its senior directors to be in the United States. Otherwise, we weren't going to get backing from U.S. investors. And that was unfortunately when markets started closing, and yeah, we got to the point where I'd already moved there, and an IPO was becoming less and less of a viable opportunity, and that was essentially when the ASP transaction came to fruition. Now with me being there, and the fact that a very large component of the group's business is going to be focused in the US, and a lot of the R&D and a lot of the consumption of the group's critical materials will be in Texas, it makes absolute sense to use the Renergen infrastructure that's been set up in Texas to become part of the global HQ. So it becomes a hand in glove fit between the two companies. There are a lot of pieces of infrastructure that Renergen has that ASP will mold into by virtue of the fact that Renergen has been listed on two stock exchange for a while. On the JSE, it's been listed for 10 years. So we've got a lot of checks and balances and infrastructure that'll play out nicely for the group. And that'll obviously also result in overall cost savings across the group by virtue of the fact that by integrating the two companies, we become a much more lean organization by using a shared services platform and a lot of shared engineers, shared scientists, shared back office. So they're more than just the blue sky opportunity of what the company brings. There are also operational synergies between the two companies.
How well do you know Paul Mann?
Pretty well. So funnily enough, at the time we didn't know it, but Paul and I were doppelgangers at Morgan Stanley. We were both working at Cabot Square in London. He was on the equity side, and I was almost his equal and opposite on the debt side. And our boss's boss or something like that was the same individual. So yeah, we met for the first time about 4 years ago, now almost 5 years ago, and we stayed in touch, and we've been checking each other's businesses out, and we've been in constant communication for the last 5 years.
And so it's well, I won't say a marriage made in heaven, but it does appear as though you do, as you say, come from a similar background. You understand how the markets work, but the lack in your armory would be the operational side, in the actual mining and getting the stuff to market. How have you complemented that within the group as a whole?
So you're talking specifically about the Virginia Gas Project?
Well, that and ASP Isotopes too, which has also got some very ambitious plans to get those isotopes from the guys in Pretoria. It's almost like these are big ambitions, and it could be massive game changers. But you've actually got to make it happen. You've got to execute. And both of you come from a background of, you can talk to the market and the market will understand you, but the execution, it usually takes a different skill set.
So the interesting thing about the two businesses, the only real mining operation that we have at the moment within the group is the Virginia Gas Project. And that was the genesis of your question, was the mining. The long and the short of it is that we were capital constrained. We spent more attention focused on building the plant than we did on the drilling, because we needed to get the plant up and running. And then it was a cash constraint that ultimately resulted in the gas flow not being there. Now that's been rectified. With regards to the ASP operations, what you need to understand about isotopes is that isotopes are not sold for general mass consumption. Yeah, copper you sell per ton. Isotopes you sell per gram, which means that you don't necessarily need to mine the stuff. Yeah, for us, if we buy a copper rod and then isotopically purify it, you're talking about millions of dollars of revenue from a copper rod. You don't need to own a mine to produce a copper rod. If you're producing carbon-14, for example, carbon-14 sells, well, I'm not going to give the exact figure, but I can tell you that it's north of $20 million a kilogram. The point is that you don't need a lot of product to go into your value chain. So there's very little mining that goes on. So then we need to address the question of, how do you produce the isotopes in the first place, and why are we so confident that we can do it? And this is where ASP has a staffing complement of about 170 people. A very large component of that are scientists, physicists, and engineers. This technology, I'm sure you're aware, the ASP process was developed many, many years ago in South Africa in response to the nuclear arms race. It's a tried and tested technology. This is a technology that works. It's been proven, and ASP has already gotten several plants up and running. They've introduced a new concept called QLE, quantum laser enrichment. And quantum laser enrichment is what they used to produce the first ytterbium, which they shipped out as well. The fact is, these plants work. They've done it. They did it in less time than they said that they would. They did it under budget. And these plants are in operation. They now have the cookie cutter recipe to be able to set these plants up. And fortunately, these plants aren't these mega facilities of $50-100 million per plant. A single plant is probably $3-5 million, and the longest lead time is the permissions that you need to order the equipment to be able to do it. It's not a Sasselberg that you're rebuilding here. This is a very simple laboratory controlled environment, where the more physicists and engineers that you have working together, the quicker you're going to get your result, and the equipment can fit inside a room.
It sounds to me like your supporters are going to be delighted with the story that you've just told us now. The one area that they won't be delighted on was the announcement that came out this week that the transaction has been postponed from the end of September to 28th of November. What's behind that?
It's regulatory approvals. I think it's no secret that regulatory red tape in South Africa is not the most business friendly for foreign companies coming in. Sorry to say that is the reality that we live with. So everything else has been done. It's just a fact of waiting for regulatory permissions. In this case, the remaining piece that we're waiting for is exchange control permission, which I can't see why they wouldn't approve it, given the fact that this transaction then opens up the door to capital coming into the country. Yeah, whether it's the $500 million plus the $250 million coming into the Virginia Gas Project, it's the equity coming into the Virginia Gas Project. It unlocks significant investment in towards creating the hub over here and expanding the plants, looking at developing additional plants down in Virginia for ASP's isotopic production. There are so many additional spin-offs that are going to result in foreign direct investment coming into South Africa that none of us can see why the Reserve Bank would deny the transaction. But until we get that approval, the transaction legally may not go ahead.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting times when you have a look forward, when if everything falls in place in the way that you hope it will. Just in the very short term, though, are you guys starting to ship product? Remembering, for those who haven't been following the story, that it's while the future looks terribly bright, you've got to get there first. You've actually got to get the product to market. Have you started that yet?
What we're focused on now is getting phase one up to nameplate capacity. And so that is paramount. That means that we've got drilling. We've ordered the long lead items on the compressors. We've ordered the pipelines. All of that's in country. It's on site. The compressors are being installed. Right now, it's a 100% focus game on making sure that when we are up and running with full gas flow, we're at nameplate capacity and running. And so that is our absolute primary focus. You know, whether we ship a couple of containers here and there, I think isn't the end prize. The main focus now has to be to make sure that we get the operations up to nameplate capacity. And that means drilling, that means laying pipelines. And that will also mean that, yeah, delivery now will be interrupted because you're taking aspects of the plant down to connect in pipes. But that's not the focus, you know. It's the important thing is making sure that we set the system up now to run at nameplate capacity. And that's all eyes are focused on that. And we hope to be able to reach full nameplate capacity during the course of the calendar year next year.
Before I let you go, because you know this industry really well, we've been following the story at Kinetico, which is an Australian listed company that's got a project in Mpumalanga. And it seemed to go under the radar, unless you were following the Kinetico share price, which we do because it's in our portfolio as a little wild card. But that share price has performed terribly well recently. You have a look at the reason for it. They've had some pretty exciting finds in Mpumalanga. Is that a surprise to you that they've managed to get gas? I mean, they're talking about, I think the number was 6 TCFs, trillion cubic foot, which Mosgas was 1 TCF that carried on for 20 years. So what's under the ground here in South Africa seems just off the charts amazing if you can get through the mining regulation and bring it to market.
Obviously,
following the Kinetico story?
I know the Kinetico team really well, just like I know the D3 team next door to us as well. Also another little bio card. Also, they've had some spectacular drilling successes too. Both are great stories, and I think both of them speak to the richness of the reserves that we have sitting underground, that the untapped potential that this country has. And it's long been an overlooked sector, which I firmly believe could greatly enhance South Africa's energy security. I think it's time now for the gas industry to rise and to take its place in South Africa's energy mix.
And I guess from your perspective, now having a listing on NASDAQ with ASP Isotopes, having an American audience who are probably better educated on this area than most South African shareholders, you can open up those markets and maybe those wallets to invest and develop this part in South Africa. But the regulations, is that still an issue?
Listen, I'll speak to our own operations. Everyone has their own challenges. So I certainly can't make blanket statements for everyone in the country. I think one of the big things that was positive was the signature of the new upstream bill, which is now an act. The act needs to be published, or gazetted rather. But I think that was a big step in the right direction, because that gives certainty to the market. It wasn't what everyone was hoping for. It wasn't perfect. But, you know, I think the best deal is a deal where both parties walk away from the table feeling slightly aggrieved. And I think that was certainly the case of here. But that's a big step in the right direction with regards to giving certainty. At the end of the day, investors just want certainty. I'd also say that we've got an excellent regulator in the form of PASA. You really would have to look very, very long and very hard globally to try and find a regulator as competent and as sharp as PASA. And that's saying something. So the Petroleum Agency of South Africa, I really took my hat to them. They are an impressive organization. We've got a great relationship with them, very proactive. So very much like them. We deal a little bit less with the DMRE, but also we've gotten great support from them, and they've been very supportive of the gas industry as a whole, not just us, but the gas industry. So I think the tide is turning with regards to the regulatory framework, and I'm speaking only for the gas industry. I've got no experience in the mining industry, so I certainly can't comment on behalf of the mining industry in South Africa. But I can say that I've had a very pleasant experience, specifically in the Virginia gas project. I've had a very, very pleasant, productive experience with the regulators here in South Africa from an upstream perspective.
Fascinating insights from Stefano Morani, who's the chief executive of Renergen. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.